The ray. Where's the way out? She gasped. Behind her, through the open door, Irene could see more people running in all directions, but ultimately all in the direction of away. There was a spreading tide of something silver oozing across the floor in a horrible stop-motion way. It would reach a row of cases, and then it was suddenly crawling round the foundations of the next row. The noise it was making, a fierce, hungry rustling and scritching, echoed in the large room, underpinning the shouting. Further back, the silver flood was oozing over ominously shaped lumps on the floor, covering them so densely that she couldn't see the colour of clothing, hair or skin.
Silverfish!
The woman screamed at them.
Get out of here now!
The oncoming menace had nearly reached the chamber door. Irene was an intelligent, self-possessed, practical woman, or at least that was how she would describe herself on a performance review to any senior librarian. She yelped in panic and scrambled on top of the desk, pulling her skirts up and crouching there in horror. She desperately tried to remember if the language had vocabulary for silverfish or instantly lethal insecticide, and, if so, what it was. Kai swept across the room in a motion almost as smooth as the approaching silverfish. He picked up the screaming woman and tossed her up onto the table beside Irene before joining them. Vale leapt onto a chair.
You said you were here to do something about the silverfish,
the woman screamed at Kai.
Why didn't you get rid of them?
Irene remembered her now. She'd been here when they were looking for Aubrey and found his skin instead. They'd fobbed her off with a story about insect infestation. Marvellous. She hated dramatic irony.
Can they eat wood? She asked. You're the exterminators. You tell me,
the woman snapped.
Silverfish eat anything starch-based, Vale informed them from his chair. Glue, bookbindings, papers, carpet, clothing, tapestries. I imagine theoretically they could eat wood. If they don't crawl up here first, Kai said, leaning over the edge of the table to look down at the floor. The silverfish weren't actually trying to crawl vertically up the table legs yet, but Irene wasn't going to wait for empirical evidence. More and more of them were now flooding into the room, crawling over each other on the floor in a thick, seething mass of unhealthy silver. Something at the back of Irene's mind was trying to get her attention. It wasn't the silverfish. It wasn't the woman next to her. It was the way that she could see a newspaper on top of a display case, and it was moving. Without the aid of silverfish, it was actually shifting itself, millimetre by millimetre, across the top of the glass, in a light rustling drift.
Vale, she gasped. Could this be triggered by subsonic frequencies? Do you have knowledge of such things?
She gestured at the swarming creatures covering the floor. Vale caught her meaning.
Possible, he said.
He frowned at the silverfish, as though they weren't starting to crawl up the legs of his chair.
Though any frequency that could provoke these creatures would surely also have some sort of an effect on humans, causing panic, perhaps.
Oh, I'm definitely panicking,
the woman said, with a little half-hysterical catch in her voice.
And they're still coming in here. They keep on coming.
Right, Irene said, trying to keep her voice calm, deliberately not thinking about insects crawling up inside her skirts and on her, and... She swallowed.
Right. They keep on coming in here. If there's a subsonic generator somewhere, then it must be either driving them or luring them in here.
Heaven and earth!
Kai swore with violent emphasis.
It must have been keyed to our opening the door. Look at the timing of it.
But if it was linked to the door, how did it...
Irene started to say, and at the same moment, Vale pointed at the door hinges.
There, he snapped. That wire. It follows the skirting and leads to the cupboard in that corner, and they're swarming more thickly around it.
Irene could barely see any traces of a wire, but she was prepared to trust Vale's eyes. The dark wood cupboard was set back into the corner of the room, and the silverfish were writhing around its base. They'd swarmed up to a foot off the floor, and now that she was paying attention, they were perceptibly more heavily concentrated there.
That'll do, she muttered.
Luckily, there was enough detailing on that particular piece of furniture for her to be precise. She'd meant to avoid language usage in case of booby traps, but she was prepared to be flexible. Any booby traps would just have to look after themselves. She raised her voice. oak-leaf handle cupboard doors unlock and open. The cupboard doors sprang open, springing wide and ripping out bolts at both top and bottom. Inside the cupboard was an intricate tangle of machinery and wires, barely visible under the silverfish which were pouring over it like scaly water. Lights on it glinted, and something was humming.
"That's it," Vale said.
"Kai,"
Irene began. "Already there," Kai said.
He leapt from the table towards the cupboard. The silverfish crunched under his shoes as he hit the floor. Then he was already spinning, body turning gracefully as he launched into a high-flying kick. His leading foot crashed into the twisted machinery with a resounding thud and tinkle. The humming stopped. Silverfish all over the room paused, then began to pour away. Some trickled down through imperceptible cracks in the flooring and skirting board. Others flowed out through the door again, scattering in all directions as soon as they could. A few still lurked around the machine, all trying to squirm underneath it, and only about half of them succeeding. Kai hopped on one foot, trying to extract his other foot from the mangled device. He was swearing in what Irene assumed were words well-brought-up dragons used when they didn't want to shock lesser creatures.
"I was about to say, please hit it with a chair," Irene said, as the hissing of moving silverfish died away to leave them in relative quiet. "But thank you. Thank you very much. Nice work."
The book lay safely in Dominic Aubrey's in-tray, untouched, unharmed. It hadn't been eaten. So much for Alberic's final gambit.
"Is that normally how you perform exterminations?" the woman asked.
She wasn't showing any sign of getting down from the table yet. To be fair, neither was Irene.
"I think they're in my shoes," Kai said in tones of deep disgust.
Vale cautiously stepped down from his chair. The few remaining silverfish took no interest in him. He walked gingerly over to Irene's table and offered her a hand down.
"Nicely done, Miss Winters."
"Thank you for noticing the wire,"
Irene replied. She took his hand and eased her way off the table, trying not to show too much leg in the process. She was going to enjoy being back in an alternate world where trousers were regular wear for women.
"Do you think that means..."
She was about to continue, "that Alberic is elsewhere and he left this trap," when she noticed the meaningful glance Vale was giving over her shoulder. Oh, of course, the woman. The sooner they could get her out of here, the better.
"Ah, thank you," she concluded.
"A trap for us," Kai said softly as she joined him.
"Plausible,"
Irene agreed, also keeping her voice down. Vale and the woman were murmuring to each other, so they shouldn't be overheard.
"A bit careless, though. It'd be bound to draw attention here, to this room, unless it was a delaying action." "It was a delaying action," the woman said.
Kai and Irene turned to look. Both she and Vale were now wedged against the table, and Vale had an odd rigidity to his posture. His eyes were furious, but his body was entirely still, hands raised as if he'd just been helping the woman down and hadn't got round to lowering them. The woman had a knife to his throat. It didn't look elegant, but it did look brutally efficient, and maybe sharp enough to remove someone's skin.
"Door close," the woman said.
The room and cupboard doors both slammed shut.
"There. Now we should have a few minutes uninterrupted."
Irene could feel her heart thudding painfully in her chest.
"You're Alberic," she said tentatively.
"Yes," the woman said.
"Our fourth meeting. And I hope that you are paying attention this time, because if you do not do exactly as I tell you, then your friend will die."
She paused.
"That is, he will die first, and with you watching."
Chapter 21. "We're listening," Irene said. She kept her hands still, avoiding anything that could be taken as provocation to slit Vale's throat.
"Please go on."
She hadn't realized that a change of skin could be quite so all-encompassing. He spoke with a woman's voice, and it was quite different from the voice she'd heard from inside their ill-fated cab. It was also different again from Aubrey's voice. Was he transplanting the vocal cords too?
No, probably just a consequence of the entire magic transferal of skin, however that worked. It would be so helpful if she could see anything unusual in his, or her, appearance. But there was nothing at all.
I'm willing to make concessions, Albrecht said. You aren't all necessarily going to die. Be sensible about this, and we can all walk away.
Irene did her best to smile in response.
Somehow I don't believe you. I'm interested in staying alive, she said. So's Kai. Aren't you, Kai?
Let Vale go, and we can talk,
Kai snarled. There was something in his voice which Irene hadn't heard before. For want of a better word, it sounded like possessiveness. A draconic emotion?
Silence, boy, Alberic said.
He very deliberately moved the knife in a fraction of an inch, and a trickle of blood ran down Vale's neck to mark his white collar.
Stay where you are, don't try to jump me, and let your superior do the talking.
Well, do you have the book, Irene? Surely he'd noticed the book in the inn tray. If he hadn't, then she wasn't going to draw his attention to it.
I can get hold of it, she offered. Is that the price?
I want more than that. There was a glitter behind his eyes, and that she would recognize if she ever saw it again. A rapacious hunger, an endless emptiness that would never be filled, with all the madness that went with it.
I have a number of questions. You can even sit down, if you like.
We'd really rather stand, Irene said quickly.
Suit yourself.
His lips curved in a smile that was somehow more a man's than a woman's.
Shall I go through the usual literary conventions? First, I tell you that you've been told slanders about me, and you nod understandingly while not believing a word of it. Then I promise that you can go free if you hand over the book, and you lie and give me a forged copy. Then I kill you.
He shrugged. The knife stayed in place.
Or shall we break from the usual tropes and actually do something different? Something that might mean you survive this.
Irene thought about how many other librarians must have been in this position. There was a reason why he was an urban legend.
Though, if they all get killed, who comes back to tell the stories?
An irritating part of her mind pointed out. She ignored it.
I don't see how you can use both the language and fey magic, she blurted out,
her mouth running on automatic while she tried to think. It wasn't hard to sound vaguely admiring, even if he'd see right through it.
I'll give you that one for free, Alberich said generously,
and Irene mentally lowered the odds on him letting them live even further.
Once a person can use the language, that can't be taken away. I've learned to use chaos since then. It involves a certain amount of personal redefinition. Difficult, but not impossible. One doesn't have to die. Something to take into account in your future career, perhaps. There are far more opportunities open to you than you might think.
Opportunities. What opportunities did she have right now? Kai might be able to use amazing dragon powers to stop Alberic entering an area, but that wasn't much use when he was already inside it. And she might be able to force Alberic out of an area using language. But again, that wasn't much help if he could simply wait outside its boundaries.
Boundaries.
A half-plausible thought moved through the back of her mind. She wished she'd had more time to ask Kai about his capabilities. When he warded an area, did the warding simply follow the track that he left, or was it a more metaphysical sort of thing, with the boundaries of his warding being linked to whatever he intended to ward?
Let's reduce the potential hostages, she said briskly, ignoring Kai's intake of breath from behind her.
If this was going to work, she needed him outside and free to act.
I'm the one you want. As you said, I'm Kai's superior. Having him stand here and maybe lose his temper won't help either of us.
She tried to look gullible, impressionable, as if she believed Alberich when he said she might survive this.
You've already got one hostage, and you know I'm concerned about his well-being. If I wasn't, we'd already be attacking or running away. Let's clear the ground. Let Kai here go as a start to the negotiations.
Alberic surveyed her thoughtfully, and again there was that flash of hunger in his eyes.
It's true that my questions concern you, not him, he said slowly. And he's no initiate. I needn't fear him trying to open a door to the library behind my back. Very well. I'll be reasonable. In return for a similar concession from you.
Irene remembered to breathe. Such as, she said.
Your birth name,
Alberic said quickly, and she realized this had been his plan all along. Magic had never been Irene's field of expertise. It still wasn't. But she didn't need to be an expert to know that Alberic's fey magic, with knowledge of her true name, could be very bad news for her.
Huh, Kai said. She suspected he was sneering.
Irene nodded to Alberic, then turned to Kai. As she had thought, he was sneering.
Kai, she said, I want you to do something very straightforward for me. I want you to go outside and stay outside. I don't want you setting one foot inside this library.
How to convey to him?
I want you to set up that warding you talked about and do it as fast as possible. I'll handle this.
Kai blinked at her, totally blindsided.
But, he started.
But me no buts, Irene snapped. It's as Alberic said. You're not a librarian, and there's nothing you can do in this situation. You don't have the language, and you can't fight him. I'm not going to endanger yet another person. Now are you going to obey my orders and get out?
She could hear her voice rising.
Or am I going to have to worry about you as well as Vale here?
Kai gave her a long stare. It felt like a reproach. It was a reproach. She didn't want to do this to him, but Alberic wasn't stupid. The slightest hint of collusion would get Vale killed, and she could only hope that Kai understood that.
You know perfectly well there's nothing I can do if I'm outside these walls, he said.
Could he have grasped what she wanted?
I'm supposed to be your colleague, not your brain-damaged dependent. At least let me stay nearby.
It's all one to me, Alberic said blandly.
Irene jerked her thumb at the door.
These are your orders, Kai. Out, and stay outside, and I don't want to see your face until we're done.
She glanced up at the window for a moment.
And don't get any ideas about flying around on the zeppelins.
Kai's eyes narrowed fractionally, and she could only hope that he'd grasped the idea.
Don't think I'm happy about this, he said,
shoulders slumping to the very angle of their first meeting. It had looked better in a leather jacket. Irene nodded and turned back to Alberic.
The door, please. Your name, please, he said,
with the same intonation that she had just used.
I give you my word that I will give you my birth name the moment Kai stands safely outside that closed door, Irene said in the language.
Neat, Alberic commented.
You think quickly. Room door open.
The door swung open, squashing silverfish in its wake, and thudded against the wall. There was nobody in the room beyond. At least, there was nobody alive. Just the huddled mounds of the few unfortunate bodies caught in the silverfish attack. Irene hoped queasily that they were just unconscious, overcome by ultrasonic waves, or something like that. She couldn't handle more deaths.
If you hurt her, Kai said softly, I swear by my father and his brothers, and by the bones of my grandfathers, that you shall pay for this.
Alberic regarded him thoughtfully.
What a curious way of putting it. I'm sure I've heard that somewhere before. Oh, never mind. I dare say I can dissect you later if it's absolutely necessary. Out of here now, before I change my mind.
Irene didn't say anything else, in case Alberic did change his mind. She gestured Kai towards the door, and wondered how long it would take him to set up a barrier, and also how long she had before Alberic was finished with her. Kai hunched his shoulders angrily and stalked out of the office.
Close, room door,
Alberic said, and it slammed shut with another squelch of splattered silverfish, leaving the three of them alone together. Irene felt the compulsion of her own oath like a noose around her neck.
My parents gave me the name of Ray, she said,
quickly choosing her words before it could force out even more detail. The phrasing was more convoluted than it might have been, but it was true enough.
I don't know their birth names, so I can give you a family name. Ray.
Alberich looked as if he was about to laugh.
And did they call you their little ray of sunshine? Actually, yes, they had.
Irene raised her brows.
Is that relevant?
Not particularly. But I have always been a curious man. His hand didn't move, and the knife at Vale's throat stayed steady.
Why don't you know their birth names?
There was no way she was telling him they were librarians too, and now she'd answered, she wasn't bound and could lie as much as she wanted.
They always kept secrets from me, she invented. I'm answering your question as best I can.
Alberich narrowed his eyes, and she suspected with a chill that he didn't believe her.
Relevant questions, then. What precisely has been going on?
She hadn't expected that one.
In what sort of detail?
There have been far too many people interfering in what might otherwise have been a perfectly straightforward extraction. Believe me, Ray.
She knew he saw her twitch when he used her name. She couldn't help it. She hadn't heard anyone use it to her for years. It was a childhood name, and she wasn't a child any longer.
I didn't ask for any of this, he went on smoothly. I would much rather have simply taken the book and left. No mess, no fuss. So I'm asking you, in a perfectly reasonable way, to stand up straight, stop stammering, and give me a full report. Imagine I'm one of your superiors.
He could have been one of her superiors, too. It was easy to imagine. They were diverse enough, such as Coppelia with her clockwork limbs, or Kashe with his thousand-yard gaze. But all had the same air of authority that Alberich was displaying. Other than that and the rumours, she knew nothing about him. She didn't even know what he looked like. And he terrified her.
Under the circumstances, Vale put in.
Remember that I can and will freeze your vocal cords too, Alberich said. And your lungs. Unless you want to explain events yourself. In which case, Ray here becomes worthless.
I believe Miss Winters can handle this, Vale said. I will only interrupt if I have something important to add.
He was probably used to coping while people held knives at his throat, Irene reflected savagely.
Allow me, she put in. I believe that the main factor here was that Wyndham knew too much.
Quite a claim, given how much Vale seems to know of library business, Alberich said pleasantly.
Irene decided to ignore that as she wondered how long Kai would take, and would she know when he'd finished. She needed to spin this out as long as possible, weave all her guesswork into a convincing narrative, and pray that Alberich would accept it.
Wyndham had connections with the Fae, she started confidently. But he also knew that Dominic Aubrey was a librarian, and, as such, opposed to the Fae. Wyndham knew the book was significant to Silver, and thought he could use it as a bargaining chip to gain something in return. Or he might have been taking some sort of complicated revenge. It was one of those Fae relationships. He decided to make sure that the book was somewhere safe while he negotiated, so he sent it under cover of another parcel to the Natural History Museum. Could she persuade Alberich to go there to look for it? And then he was murdered.
Oh yes, Alberich said.
I arranged his killing. My agents didn't find the book while they were there, but that would be because Belphegor got there first. The Iron Brotherhood were extremely useful. Vampire-killing assassins, automata to send after you, and other things too. It seemed the easiest way for me to get hold of the book. I didn't feel like dealing with Silver or the other local Fae. Some of my allies have issues with certain factions. But I won't bore you with the details. I entered this alternate, took control of the Iron Brotherhood, found the locally stationed librarian, questioned him, and assumed his skin. Simple enough. Speaking of that, do you still have it?
Irene abruptly wanted to be sick. She'd maintained some control during werewolf attacks, zeppelin near crashes, and silverfish fatalities. But this was different. Questioned him. Assumed his skin. It was you, wasn't it? the first time? He understood her question, ill-formed as it was.
Oh, yes.
I was the one who met you and your student when he first came through.
To be honest, you've been rather a surprise to me.
Flattery will get you nowhere, Irene said primly, counting seconds in her head. Something else was clearly ticking over behind Alberic's eyes, too.
If you'd found the book in the Natural History Museum, you could have gone straight back to the library by forcing a portal elsewhere. You wouldn't have needed to come here. And you've admitted Wyndham knew that Aubrey was a librarian. Answer me, Ray. Did Wyndham send the book to Aubrey?
Yes, Irene said. The word came grating from her mouth in response to his question and his use of her name before she could waltz around the subject any further. A high colour showed on Alberic's cheeks. It must be some sort of anger reaction transmuted by the skin he was wearing.
Are you telling me that the book came here?
Irene could feel the response dragging at her throat, trying to say itself. Vale's eyes met hers for a moment as she weighed the benefit of distracting Alberic further against the risk of his cutting Vale's throat if he lost his temper.
Yes,
she said quickly, giving in and letting the word out, before Alberic felt the need to make good on his threats.
And it's the book on the desk.
Irene opened her mouth to deny it, but couldn't. The word dragged itself from her lips.
Yes.
Alberic exploded.
You pitiful little idiot! Do you have any idea how much effort I've had to put in here over the last few days?
He was shrieking like a harridan, and though the knife at Vale's throat was steady, his face was wrong. His mouth open a little too wide, his eyes staring furiously, spittle spraying the side of Vale's face.
I shift skins twice. I take my attention away from very important projects, and because you have been running around hiding this book, my efforts have been wasted. Do you think that's funny, Ray? Do you?
The room began to shift and crawl around him. The papers on the desk ran into liquid and dripped away, running down to splash against the floor. Dead silverfish dissolved into vapour that blew outwards in widening curls, as though Alberic and Vale stood at the centre of a whirlwind. The panes of glass in the display cases began to vibrate, thrumming as if someone was singing at an impossibly high pitch. And now Irene could feel it pulsing at the back of her skull, humming in her ears.
Stop it!
She cried out. No, Alberic said. He smiled at her, abruptly calm.
No. It isn't funny. I'll take that book. You will give it to me. Or you'll cut your hostage's throat,
Irene said. She was still shaken from the sudden flux. Everything about it had been wrong. The Fae were bad enough, but this softening of reality had been much worse. She'd been ready to face death even, but that... No.
Be reasonable, Alberic said.
I'll need a new skin soon. Another librarian skin would suit me quite well. So would Vale's position in society. Don't give me any excuses, Ray. Don't give me any more reasons to slit this man's throat and then rip your skin off. Be very polite, be very helpful, and listen to what I'm about to tell you. Irene simply jerked her head in a nod. She was afraid of touching off that anger again, afraid for Vale's sake, and, more honestly, terrified for herself.
Where was I?
For a moment, he reminded her of Dominic Aubrey, making her wonder how much of that charade had been imitation and how much had been genuine Alberic filtered through a dead man's skin. She liked Aubrey.
Ah, yes. Motivations. Tell me, Ray, what is the purpose of the library?
To preserve, Irene said automatically. Alberic nodded, as though he'd expected that answer.
Now tell me honestly and sincerely, that you've never thought about using the knowledge you've helped preserve to change the worlds around you for the better. Or do you think they're already perfect?
His voice dripped sarcasm. Irene felt as if she was having to run through a minefield blindfolded, with no idea what the correct answers were.
Of course I've thought about it, but you know that they don't send us...
For a moment, she wished she hadn't used the word us. It brought them onto the same level.
out on missions unless they're certain that they can trust us. And you accept that so readily. It's the price I chose to pay to get what I wanted.
She'd never wanted anything else.
Don't think I make this sort of offer to just any librarian, Alberic went on. You've shown a degree of intelligence which has impressed me. Not all librarians know when and how to break the rules.
Excuse me a moment, Vale said politely, while Irene wondered if Alberic gave the "normally I wouldn't spare your life but your special" spiel to every librarian he met. May I ask what happened to the original Miss Mooney?
Who?
Alberic said blankly. The woman whose body you are occupying. Vale's tone dripped with cold disdain. Jennifer Mooney, one of the more influential figures in the Iron Brotherhood. I recollect the face from one of Singh's photographs. I wish I had remembered it earlier.
Oh, Alberic smiled. Ah, Ms. Mooney. I had to take her identity in quite a hurry in order to use the Brotherhood as a diversion. Irene could have kicked herself. Of course, the alligator attack on the embassy to distract Silver. She clearly remembered him dashing off to protect a book. And Alberic had been right on the scene afterwards, leading to their almost drowning. Then there was the assault on the Natural History Museum. All of it made sense now. That was what he'd meant earlier, when he'd said that he had taken control of the Brotherhood. She saw Vale's face twitch in mortified humiliation. He must be having the same chain of thought, and blaming himself for not deducing it earlier. And they have the most baroque ideas about false names and false identities. You'd think that a pro-technology group would be more efficient about record-keeping, wouldn't you? Now, if only you'd said Damocles, I'd have known precisely whom you meant. He didn't even know her name. For some reason, that utterly chilled Irene through and through. And Alberic must have seen it on her face, for he went on, "And now, Mr. Vale, no more words. Your vocal cords are locked shut." Irene saw the sudden flare of panic in Vale's eyes and saw his mouth move, but he made no sound. I don't think he copes well with being helpless. Anger fought with the fear that held her still, too, its heat against the cold. And I don't think I cope well either. Let us assume that you have three options, Ray, Alberic said, dropping back to his conversational tone. The first is that you agree to help me. Give me the book, swear your loyalty by certain oaths which I shall dictate to you, and join me. The library was never meant to be just a storehouse for books and a school for the obsessive. It could change worlds. It could unite alternate worlds. It has potential. You have potential, and that potential is being wasted. I would swear my protection to you, just as you would swear your loyalty to me, and you would be safe. You could learn to use fey powers, just as I have done. Perhaps in time you would challenge me. But together we would do terrible and wonderful things. You know that some key books can change the worlds to which they are linked. Help me, and we will change them for the better. You'll have the power to make things better. If you refuse that power, then that's a choice in itself, isn't it? All the worlds for her own. Of course, she wasn't going to take the bargain. Of course she could never be his minion and slave. But the thought of the pure irresponsibility of doing precisely as she wanted, with the power to do it. The second choice is for you to put the book down and walk away. He was watching her closely through the stolen eyes of the woman whom he'd killed. Your elders won't blame you. They know my quality, my power. They'll consider that you did the sensible thing. I might even agree with them. She gave a little jerk of her head in acknowledgement. And the third choice? Alberic shrugged. You would regret putting me to that trouble. Irene swallowed. Her imagination was functional and thus troublesome. It was now giving her unpleasant ideas about what Alberic might do if he actually exerted himself. If he viewed killing and skinning someone as merely regular business,
What would he consider extra effort? Half-formed images nauseated her, and she swallowed back bile. She barely managed to keep her voice steady.
I think that's only two choices, though.
Is it? Albrecht murmured.
I have the suspicion that there's only one way I walk out of here alive.
Well, true, Albrecht admitted. But the second option would be comparatively painless for you. My word on it.
Can I ask?
No.
His eyes narrowed.
I think you're playing for time, Ray. I need your decision now. I'll throw your friend in as a signing bonus, but I want your decision in 5 seconds. 4. 3.
If she swore herself to him in the language, she'd be bound for life. He wasn't stupid. He was the sort of person who'd have prepared the wording in advance. There would be no loopholes.
2.
Perhaps people said he'd killed librarians because nobody ever came back. But maybe they'd all joined him. She could be joining a secret group who are going to change reality and make the universe a better place.
1. Maybe someone who went round skinning and killing people, order as yet unspecified, was not concerned with making the universe a better place. Just a thought.
0.
Ray, Albrecht said. He had a hopeful sort of smile on his face, as if he genuinely wanted her to say yes. He probably did. She was about to die. What she needed was a miracle. What she got was a dragon.
Chapter 22. Irene had always assumed, when she had read about dragons roaring, that the descriptions were figurative, or at least hyperbolic. She'd thought that phrases like shook the earth referred to the awe in which dragons were held. Naturally, the world around them would be sundered by their fury. What else should one expect from dragons? But the physical world wasn't shaken by a dragon's roar. Reality itself trembled.
What the devil?
Albrecht swore, the words at odds with his prim female persona. His hand visibly tensed on the knife at Vale's neck, and Irene knew with a sickening dread that he was about to slash the detective's throat open purely on reflex. Then his eyes narrowed in thought.
Too simple, Ray. By my will and by your name, you can neither speak nor move.
It wasn't the language. It had nothing of the language's command, but his words had their own power, and fey magic hung in them like chains. Irene was pinned in place like a butterfly, her brand burning on her back as the library's power fought his command. She was conscious of everything around her, the crushed insects, her hurried breathing, the trickle of blood on Vale's neck, Albrecht's calculating eyes, and none of it was any use. There hadn't been time to invoke the library and force him out of the room as she'd planned. She'd been as shaken as he was by Kai's roar. He'd just recovered faster. It made her feel stupidly embarrassed, but she had to remind herself that this wasn't a marks will be awarded situation. It was a he's about to kill you situation. But for all her fury, she couldn't move a muscle.
A pity, Albrecht said. I was really quite impressed with you. Bradamant was efficient, but not remotely as perceptive. I'm afraid you've run out of time to decide if there's a dragon in the picture. But rest assured that I will remember you fondly.
The door slammed open, and Albrecht's eyes widened as he saw who it was. He opened his mouth to speak, but 3 bullets in rapid succession hit him in the center of the forehead. It was as neat and quick as a sewing machine's needle, wrapping down again and again. He staggered back from Vale, arms flailing as his skirts churned around his legs. He grasped weakly at the table, but no blood ran from the open wounds.
Vale and Irene, move freely, Bradamant shouted in the language. And get away from him, she added in English. I don't know if that's killed him.
It hasn't, Albrecht said. Gun explode. Bradamant threw the gun aside just in time. It came apart in midair in a burst of metal and fire. She ducked at the same moment, moving for cover. Vale threw himself to one side as Albrecht gestured.
But a ripple of air tore into Vale and flung him into one of the display cases, which shattered in a burst of glass. There was an ugly cracking noise. Vale didn't get up again.
I really shouldn't give people so much time to decide, Alberich said.
He ignored Irene as she stood, frozen. His fey magic still held her, wrapped in chains around her name and spirit.
Bradamant, my dear, would you like to make a deal for the lives of your friends?
Only a fool would make a deal with you,
Bradamant snapped. She'd taken cover behind a large freestanding cabinet.
Accurate, but impertinent.
The holes in Alberic's forehead were bloodless and unnaturally dark, with neither flesh nor bone visible. He raised his hand, palm towards Bradamant.
The greater lords of the Fae don't manifest in their true form in the physical worlds. Do you know why?
Their chaos is too great,
Bradamant answered, her tone as sharp as if she was being questioned in class.
They would unmake a world.
Exactly, Alberic purred.
And you wouldn't want that.
The very air began to shudder around his hand. It smoked as if his flesh was liquid nitrogen, cold enough to burn a hole in reality.
And to prevent that manifestation, I only need one of you with your skin intact.
Irene breathed. He hadn't forbidden her to do that, and she was not going to accept the binding he had set on her. She was a librarian, and while that made her the library's servant, it was also a protection. The language was her freedom. Bradamant had told her to move freely. She could not allow.
And her brand was a weight across her back, a heavy burden trying to force her to her knees.
She would not.
White hot iron searing into her.
Permit him to do this. She refused to submit. Even if he was a monster, something that had killed greater librarians than herself, she was not going to accept his binding. Irene opened her mouth. The tiny movement of parting her lips seemed to take years as she watched dark fire blossom around Alberic's hand. She fought for something to distract him, to give her time to invoke the library, and it came to her in a burst of inspiration.
Jennifer Mooney's skin, get off that body now!
And it did, in rags and tatters, like a piece of clothing being ripped apart along the seams. The flame around Alberic's hand died, and he opened his mouth wide in a howl of pain. The dress disintegrated, falling apart like the pale fragments of skin. What lay behind it was so painful to Irene's eyes that she had to turn and shield them with her hand. Behind the stolen skin, Alberic was a living hole into some place or universe that should not exist on any human plane. In that brief moment, she had seen living muscle, tendon and blood, but also colours and masses that left burning spaces on her retinas. She'd seen things moving, which bent the light around them, and shifting structures which made no sense. All her reality suddenly seemed as fragile as a curtain, which someone was about to rip through at any moment. Irene was aware that she was screaming, and she could hear Bradamant crying out as well. Yet behind it all was Alberic, his voice higher than any human's normal pitch, screaming in pure rage and pain.
So that's why he has to wear a skin.
Her thoughts rattled, as though the words could form a chain to sanity, link by link.
So that's why he has to wear a skin.
Alberic turned and pointed at her, and reality warped in the wake of his gesture. The wooden floor rotted under her feet, and mouths opened in it to gulp at dead silverfish and bite at her ankles. Thick knots of webbing dropped from the ceiling, full of spiders and drifting ash.
They'll come for you,
Alberic whispered. His voice had changed again, no longer female or the voice of Aubrey, but something else. Something that hummed like the keys of an out-of-tune piano, just missing normal human harmonies to strike out a more painful music.
You've hurt me, and I'll hurt you in turn. I'll give you to the White Singers and the Fallen Towers.
A fold of spiderweb fell across Irene's face, and the sheer horror of having to drag it away, feeling the spiders begin to crawl into her hair, somehow yanked her back into sanity. Her horror turned from something alien and bone deep into more mundane human disgust.
She needed a moment to speak the library's name and so invoke it. That had been the plan. Minimal and pitiful as it was, that had been the plan. But Alberic would know it the moment she began, and she had his full attention. She'd never get the word out. Bradamant was screaming, no help from that quarter, and Vale was unconscious, she hoped. Better unconscious than dead. Glass cracked, and splinters from another display case ripped into her dress, distorting into glass singing birds with bright claws and edged beaks. She flung her arm up to shield her face, and a glass bird lashed at her hand, thrashing wings leaving deep scratches. Blood ran like ink down her arm. Of course. A language was far more than the spoken word, after all. She clamped her hands shut around the squirming bird and fell to her knees. She could hear herself screaming in agony as the thing sliced into her palm and fingers, but it seemed somehow distant. The impossibilities around her were far more real and visceral than the pain. She dimly wondered if she was destroying her hand again. But set against her life or her sanity, then the choice was clear. Through her tangled, cobwebbed hair, she saw Alberic raise his hand, perhaps to call up more horrors or deliver the death blow. Alberic could have stopped her if she had tried to speak. He ignored it when she drove the squirming bird into the soupy wood of the floor, as she scraped it along to create a long, blood-filled cut. He merely laughed as more debris came raining down on her shoulders from the now unstable ceiling. But she needed an excuse to explain her actions, something he would expect her to try. Irene raised both hands, pointing the bloody glass bird at him.
"Floor!"
she screamed in the language.
"Swallow Alberic!"
The heaving mass of rotten wood surged round his feet. But he remained above it, as if walking on water.
"Let's try that the other way around, shall we?"
he laughed at her.
"Go down and drown in it."
She was already on her knees. She felt the wood slurp upwards around her legs like thick mud, sliding up to her thighs. It didn't soak through the skirts of her gown like water, but pressed against her like hungry lips. She had a moment of panic. What would happen if her idea didn't work? She let herself scream, and driven by the energy of that terror, sliced the glass bird into the remaining floor, and again, as she sank further into the wood, as if she were trying to save herself. Her blood spattered onto the scored lines as the wood closed around her waist. The bird's marks stood clear in the slowly oozing floor. Maybe because it was written in the language, or just because it had to work, or she was worse than dead.
"Beg me, and I'll save you,"
Alberic said gleefully.
"Beg me, and I'll make you my favored student, my own sweet child."
The cobwebbing covered her eyes now. She was working blind. But some things she knew, even in the dark. "No," she said, and cut the final line into place. The symbol representing the library itself showed clearly in the rippling wood between them. The library didn't arrive like a roaring dragon or waves of chaos, but there was a light in the room that hadn't been there before, more penetrating and clearer than the fluttering gas lamps. The spider webs that had clung to her face and shoulders flaked away as fine dust. The library's authority pulsed through the room in a steady whisper, like pages turned in slow motion, and stability followed. The floor was now firm where Irene knelt on it, and the glass in her hand was sharp, but it wasn't a living bird. The light even muted the horror of Alberic's form, turning it to something seen as if through dull glass, retreating further and further away. He was actually slowly withdrawing. The library's presence was driving him back, and though its touch felt welcoming to her, like a feeling of home, it was forcing Alberic away. And if the sounds he was making were any judge, his expulsion was pure agony. He hadn't quite finished with her yet, though. Blackness flared in his eyes and his open mouth.
"You call this a victory, Ray?"
And then his back touched the wall, and he started moving through it. The wall thinned to translucency around him as he struggled, partly immersed, like amber around a prehistoric insect. Then, as they watched, Alberic's back arched, and he screamed. But this was on a different scale than anything they'd heard so far. Irene felt her heart lurch in unwanted sympathy as she saw the punishment that he was suffering. Alberich was crucified between the reality of the library and the barrier that Kai had created outside. A squirming thing of chaos trapped between two surfaces of reality. Irene realized that she hadn't the remotest idea what would happen next. She didn't know. She didn't care, as long as it got him away from here. There was no place for that sort of unreality in this world. It was abhorrent. What had he done to himself to become this? What sort of bargains had he struck?
"Release me,"
Alberich choked out. Blood drooled from his mouth.
"You can't trust the dragons. They'll turn on you as well. Release me, and I'll tell you."
"Don't be an idiot," Bradamant spat. She was pulling herself up off the floor, her gown in shreds, leaning on the wreckage of a chair to support herself. "Do you really think we'd let you go now?" "Thank you for so helpfully stating the obvious," Irene thought, but managed to keep it to herself. She simply shook her head. A slow-burning flame of something that might be hope was kindling inside her. What they'd done had hurt Alberich. It had frightened him. They might actually win. She hadn't realized how much she'd assumed they'd already lost.
"You'll regret this,"
Alberich whispered in the language. The light increased, and he decreased in proportion, fading back and away from them like a disappearing stain. His last scream rang through the room, shattering the remaining glass and throwing books from the shelves. Irene caught a last glimpse of his face, a human face livid with rage, as he vanished. "Irene!" Bradamant was suddenly there, and she'd lost a few moments of time. She'd been watching Alberich vanish, and now Bradamant had an arm round her shoulder and was making her sit down. Vale. Hadn't Vale been unconscious? Was fussing over her hands. "Irene, listen. I promise I won't take it," Bradamant was saying. "I will give you my word in the language right now if you like, and Vale is here too as witness. If you let go of that book, it will make it a lot easier for us to take care of your hands. Irene, please, listen to me. Say something to me here." The door burst open, again.
"Irene!"
That was Kai shouting. Irene could only hope that no civilians were close enough to hear it.
"Bradamant, what have you done to her?"
+10 for genuine concern for my welfare, Irene decided. "Minus several thousand for perception."
"Please," Vale said wearily. "It was that Alberich person. Your plan worked perfectly, but I'm afraid that Miss Winters is in shock. If you would just help us persuade her to relax so that we can bandage her hands, I have some brandy here."
"Don't waste that on my hands," Irene mumbled. She hadn't even realized that she'd picked the book up. She let Bradamant ease the book out from under her arm. "I need a drink."
"Miss Winters,"
Vale exclaimed. "Make that 2 healthy drinks. I'm in shock. Give me brandy."
"But your hands," Vale protested. "They need immediate care."
Irene didn't want to look, but she forced herself. There were deep cuts across both palms and the insides of her fingers. Flaps of skin hung loose, and she thought she could see bone. She looked away before she embarrassed herself by throwing up. The skirt of her dress was wet with her blood. She must be in shock, or it would be hurting even more than it already did. She'd never hurt herself this badly. She wasn't even sure if it could be fixed. "There are people in the library who can deal with this," she said firmly, desperately praying that she wasn't lying to herself. Her words came spilling out, quick and professional, a distraction from the reality of her hands. She could hear the forced lightness of her tone. Her speech sounded as if it was coming to her from a great distance, like the chirping of little birds very far away. "Mr. Vale, thank you for your assistance, and I'm sorry that you were dragged into this. Bradamant, please can you check the door, the inner door, the library ingress, for any traps?" "I don't think there could be any alien influences after you invoked the library inside this place," Bradamant said gently. "Oh." She must be more in shock than she'd thought. "All right then. Kai,
Please help me stand.
Kai slipped an arm around her, helping her to her feet. Under other circumstances, she might have been more careful about leaning on him. But at the moment, it really didn't seem that important, so she was leaning on him. She was injured. He was her colleague. It was only sensible. His clothing was disarranged, but still there. So turning into a dragon didn't mean that you lost all your clothing. This seemed unduly significant, and she filed it away so she could ask questions later.
Are you sure about this?
He asked in an undertone.
I think it's best that we're out of here before any questions need answering.
That piece of wisdom was drilled into all librarians very early on.
Ahem.
Vale brushed at the trickle of blood on his collar, rather pointlessly, considering his generally disheveled state.
While I am willing to abet Singin, well, covering this up, I would also be interested in finding out more about this. Before you go, Miss Winters, all of you, can you tell me about the last story in that book?
Bradamant opened her mouth, and the first word was obviously going to be no, and so were all the rest of them. Irene held up one hand to stop her.
Mr. Vale, are you sure that you want us reporting to our superiors that you read it, whatever it is?
I find it hard to believe that they will assume I didn't read it, Vale said dryly.
That was true enough.
I suppose there's no reason why you shouldn't look over our shoulders as we check that it's the right book, Irene said slowly.
She cast a quick glance at Kai, but he had enough sense to keep his mouth shut and not to mention they'd already done so.
Bradamant, you said to check the 87th story, correct?
She indicated the book, now in Bradamant's possession.
I would open it myself, but my hands...
Bradamant pursed her lips, then nodded. Perhaps she sympathized, or perhaps she intended to blame every last bit of unauthorized exposure on Irene. She wiped her hands clean of dust and blood on the battered skirts of her dress and flipped the book open.
The 87th story, yes. The story of the stone from the Tower of Babel.
She breathed a deep sigh.
It's here. 87th of... 88?
The silence hung in the room as they all considered that point. If it was unusual that an 87th story should exist, Irene thought, then what was the 88th doing there? Could Bradamant have been given a mere indicator as opposed to the true reason why the book was so important?
My German's not very good,
Kai said plaintively. Bradamant gave a put-upon sigh.
Once upon a time, she began to translate. There lived a brother and a sister who both belonged to the same library. Now this was a strange library, for it held books from a thousand worlds, but lay outside all of them. And the brother and sister loved each other and worked together to find new books for their library.
No wonder your people didn't want this one getting loose, Vale said with satisfaction.
Bradamant paused to raise her eyebrows at him before continuing.
One day, the brother said to his sister, since this library contains all books, does it contain the story of its own founding?
No, Irene said.
Surely it must, Kai said. We probably just don't have access to it yet.
If you don't mind, Bradamant said.
I beg your pardon, Kai said.
Bradamant nodded coldly and went on.
I suppose so, the sister said. But it would be unwise to seek it. Why? The brother asked. Because of the nature of the library's secret, the sister answered, that we both wear branded upon our backs.
It has the proper cadence for a brother's grim story, Vale said helpfully.
Irene felt her back itch.
Now the brother had never troubled to look at the mark upon his back, Bradamant went on. But that night he sought a mirror and read the writing on his skin. And what he read there sent him mad. He left the library then, and he colluded with its enemies against it. But most of all, he swore vengeance against his sister, for she had spoken the words that set him on this path. 100 years later, his sister returned to the library following a quest that she had been set, and she was with child.
100 years, Vale said.
It can happen, Irene said. If she'd been in an alternate where there was some way to slow aging, high technology or high sorcery. But the pregnancy would be the problem.
Yes, exactly.